Hello and welcome back to How to Be a Healer. This episode is all about how to be a yoga teacher. So if you've ever been interested in training, this is such a good episode for you. I get to speak to the incredible Jeannie from the Alchemy School of Yoga, and she is a yoga teacher, a yoga educator, and a yoga teacher trainer and businesswoman. So enjoy, she's wonderful, lots of practical tools and really good information for anyone who wants to be a yoga teacher. I will see you at the end. Told you were just like this absolute pillar of wisdom about yoga, and I wanted to do an episode for how to be a yoga teacher, and I just love to know all about you and like what, when you meet people, what do you say, how do you sort of introduce yourself and like what you do?
Oh yeah, that's a tough one, and sometimes I struggle with this myself, because it's like how do I succinctly sum up 38 years of life and experience?
Totally.
Yeah, but I suppose something that I've learned over, like, I've been full-time teaching yoga now for nearly 9 years, and you know, you slowly start to realize, oh, actually, that's what I do. And something that's always helpful, actually, is like what's on your Instagram bio, you know, because that's often the place where within seconds people will, you know whether they want to interact with you or not, let's say.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I suppose first and foremost, I'm a yoga teacher. And then over the last few years, I've started to realize many things through that I'm also a businesswoman, which was a reluctant journey. Actually, I had very negative connotations around business. But I've definitely discovered that there's a way to do it beautifully and, you know, with a nurturing and abundant attitude. I suppose I would call myself a yoga educator or yoga teacher trainer as well, in the sense that that's one of my biggest passions, is I love helping people learn how to be yoga teachers and learn how to do it beautifully. Yeah. I think I was really fortunate that I had some really, really great training. And I come from a line of teachers. My mom and my brother are secondary school teachers, let's say, so there's lots of educators in the family, and I hope, I like to think that it's something I do well and comes naturally, and I feel like it's something that's definitely really needed in the yoga world, because it's a newish way of how we teach yoga, and unfortunately there's a lot of not great trainings out there. There's some amazing ones. I suppose that sum it up.
That is so beautiful. Thank you so much for saying that. I love what you said about business, and I want to pick your brains about that in a bit, actually, because that's such a, I think that's so helpful for so many people, because I think they can totally relate to what you just said. And when you said you want to teach people yoga, this is exactly why I wanted you on, because I wanted to make this for someone who is like, they could be working in media or they could be working in a bakery or whatever, and they have this burning desire to be a yoga teacher, but they don't know anyone in that community and they don't know where to start, and it can feel overwhelming if they are not part of they didn't grow up around anyone who did this, or they're a bit shy. Where do you think someone, I know it's a bit of a broad question, but where do you think someone should start?
Yeah, no, it's a really, really good question, because in the sense of being a yoga teacher as a profession, it's a fairly new thing, you know, so they may not know anybody, like you just said. Yeah. And my instant, quick, short answer to you is that they should go with their gut. Yeah. Now that is if they have a finely tuned gut, and that they make sure that they're not being, I suppose, duped by marketing, because something I've noticed is some of the best teachers I've trained with over the years often have little to no social media presence, or, you know, they're sole focus is on their trainings and their yogic lifestyle and the beautiful offerings that they have, as opposed to here's a super curated, you know, a lot of money and time invested in this marketing campaign. Now, that's not to say that if it's a really good marketing campaign, that they can't be good teachers, because I definitely know a few people who are able to do both. But for example, my teacher that I've done the majority of my study with has been teaching yoga for like close to 40 years and has trained thousands of students. And I think I have more followers than him on social media, which tells you all you need to know, you know, that and it really isn't about followers. And I know most people listening know that as well. Yet the people who do follow him on social media are dedicated students and highly invested. And, you know, I imagine have learned, just like I have, so much wisdom and life lessons and skills from those trainings. So go with your gut, number one, and try not to get fooled by clever marketing. Now, marketing, which I've been really learning lately, isn't about tricking people into doing things they don't want to do. It can be, when it's used well, effectively communicating what it is you're offering. But just make sure that it's not lots of flashy, you know, kind of hooks to try and get you in. Make sure it's actually the type of yoga you want to learn and the way you want to learn. So currently there's kind of two, and I'm being very broad here, but it's kind of two ways to learn to be a yoga teacher. You can either do an immersion, which is where you go somewhere and for 30 to 60 days you're immersed in a training. You're, you know, up at the dawn, you finish in the evenings, your accommodation, your food is all provided, you know, it's, you're very much going and sitting with the teacher and dedicating your time to that. It's, they're often called intensives. They are quite intensive. But
and are they often
nothing else?
Yeah, they often, I've seen sometimes, are they often abroad or in, like, they can be sort of all over the world, and you go on that like a kind of a retreat.
Yeah, so they're typically in, you know, I'm going to use the word sexy, quite sexy locations, you know, like Bali and lots of places near the beach, Goa in India. And again, that's not to say that they're not brilliant training. Some of them are. However, some of them are definitely using the location as the lure to, you know, if you're going to spend 30 days of your time or however long, then, you know, most people would like to be somewhere maybe warm with fresh food and nice things to look at. Myself personally, I do one in Dingle in Ireland in the summer, which we could get the most glorious weather or it could rain for 20 days. So they are done often in other locations that maybe aren't, you know, as foreign to those listening.
Yeah.
But traditionally they are. Now, that's amazing for people who want to travel and experience a new country. But that's not always accessible for other people. So the other way of doing a training would be to, a lot of people offer it as like maybe 9 or 10 weekends over the year, so that people who maybe don't learn very well in an intensive setting, or for people who maybe have, you know, commitments like children, animals, you know, they can't get away from their other job, or they have people they care for, then that suits them a lot better. It suits people who like to take information, digest it, integrate it over a long period of time, because everybody learns differently. And that's something, as a yoga educator and someone looking to do a training, should really tune in to make sure that the teachers have that level of awareness that not everyone's going to learn the same. Because we all know there's content and then there's how the content is delivered. So for me personally, the approach I take when I'm training teachers is that I'm going to help you and encourage you and motivate you to truly understand and experience what yoga is first. And from that place, you can learn how to teach it. A lot of people and a lot of trainings I've seen throw all of their energy at, you know, here's how you teach, here's how you teach, here's how you teach. And actually, I've spoken to a lot of students who've come away from those type of trainings where they know how to teach a class, but they actually don't have much, I feel, of an idea of actually what yoga is, because the majority of the time on their training was spent learning how to teach.
Right.
And we all know,
Yeah.
when you truly understand something, you can, anyone can teach it. Now, obviously, there's ways and, of course, tools and techniques to teach well. But
Yeah.
when you deeply, truly have lived something, have understood it and experienced it, then you're definitely going to teach from a better place. So maybe that's another tip for people listening, that do the people running the training have teaching experience and teaching qualifications? And that might sound hilarious that I'm even saying that, but
I think that's really useful.
It is happening, and there's very few regulatory bodies in the yoga world. And some people would argue that actually this is an art, it's a craft, it's an ancient practice. Should we be regulating it at all? However, you know, there's very few oversights, let's say, of people monitoring. So I know a lot of people who've done, let's say, what's called a 200 hour training, which is your basic level one training.
Okay.
And they then go on to deliver that training themselves. So they actually only have the same qualification as the qualification they're giving, if that makes sense. So you can imagine that allows for a lot of dilution of the quality of the content. Again, that's not to say, I know some people who've done that who are phenomenal teachers and they've done beautiful training. But,
yeah, no, I think I just don't want anyone to be taken advantage of. So I think this is just so helpful, because if you didn't know, I wouldn't know that at all. Like, I mean, you can obviously look things up, but sometimes you just get a bit confused and overwhelmed with what you're looking up, and you need someone like you who's like walking their talk and like lives and breathes this and understands. Yeah, like, people can mean really well, but there are obviously, you know, some certain things you should look out for, and I think that's really practical and helpful for people.
I think for people the first step is like looking practically and also in your heart to which way of those two ways would suit you better, you know, your lifestyle, your current situation, finances, commitments. And then the next step, I would say, is to look into different styles of yoga and different styles of yoga that you feel support you and your practice, as opposed to, oh, this is the style that I see taught a lot in studios. Again, that doesn't mean that that's the style of yoga. It might be a popular style in your area, but that's probably more than likely because there's a teacher teaching that style, you know, and maybe there's a different style of yoga that you really resonate with that you could bring to your community. Because the one thing I would say from experience is that when I teach a class from lived experience, it's hands down always a better class than if I teach a class of, oh, you know, I've heard that this style of yoga is popular, and so I'm going to teach, but it doesn't suit me and it doesn't suit my body.
Yeah,
you can definitely learn how to teach it, but when you're teaching from your own lived experience, the chances are very likely that there's someone else in that class who is having the same experience, if not multiple people, and your students will find you based on what you're offering. So you could look at like 10 studios in your area and see that nobody's offering restorative yoga, but you have a deep connection to that practice, or you found that it really has served you.
Yeah.
Then, you know, it can be scary, but to take that plunge and take that step and start offering that style. And again, more often than not, if you're teaching from the heart and you're teaching from experience, people will find you, and they might have been crying out for that style. It just wasn't being offered, you know?
Oh my God, you're so right. It's like, you can just turn your light on and like whatever stuff, and your people will find you.
100%.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And what would you say is a sort of a reasonable amount? Like, if people wanted to save up for this training, do you think, is there a kind of vague ballpark of like how much it costs to train if you want to teach yoga?
Yeah, so I should actually say that those two styles are like the intensive or the kind of broadly spread out over the year. That tends to be the kind of international way, and that's usually under the Yoga Alliance or the Yoga Alliance Professionals, which are two different bodies. They're the major ones. There's lots of other ones.
Okay.
But for some of your listeners, I think you're based in the UK.
Yes.
There's also the British Wheel of Yoga, which is actually, and I'm not that familiar. I used to teach in the UK, but I haven't done a British Wheel of Yoga qualification. But as far as I remember, that's actually a diploma. And I think they run it under like a training body that's based in the UK that would be similar to, you know, sports coaches and so it's kind of like it's a diploma that's recognized under the academic framework in the UK, as far as I'm aware, but I'm not hugely au fait with that side of it. But that's maybe like a third option for people. Again, that's I think maybe 2 or 3 years, and it's spread out over those 2 or 3 years. So it is a diploma, and it is a level 5, I think, or maybe level 5, whatever the levels of, you know, the international qualifications are. So that is recognized then by other educational bodies. So that's another way that people maybe based in the UK might like to look into. But if we're looking at the intensives or the kind of spread out over the course of the year, they can range vastly from, like, I've seen ones offered for like 500 or 600 or 700 euro. So yeah, similar amount in pounds. They're often online. They might be 100% online. And a lot of that content could be pre-recorded. So it's not tailored or personal, let's say, to the people attending. Now, that's, again, not to say that it's not good, but the only way people can deliver that level of a training for that amount of money is that it's recorded once and kind of sent out to you. And then, you know, the rest of the hours that you're learning are live. And, you know, you could have 70, 100, 200 people attending it. You know, again, that's the only way usually that it can be financially viable for people to do it.
Yeah.
And I've seen them go right up to kind of 4,000 or 5,000 euro. Now, that's typically including your food and accommodation for that length of time if you're doing an intensive. But the average amount, I would say, is about 2,000 euro. Again, or in and around that dollars. Let's say the current training I'm running this July, which is for people who want to become yoga teachers. So it's a 200-hour training. That's 3,500 euro, and that includes for the whole month, let's say, your food and accommodation, which in Ireland is a lot more expensive than if I was to do that in India or Bali or Thailand, where, you know, food and accommodation are much cheaper.
Yeah.
So that gives you kind of a bit of an idea. The thing people also need to consider is if they're traveling abroad, include your flights, your visas, your travel insurance, you know, transfers within the area. But you're looking at under kind of 4,000 typically. I've seen them much cheaper.
That's so helpful, because I think if you just had a framework to kind of a reference point, I think that's so useful. Because, you know, if someone's got like a burning desire and then someone's like, yeah, it costs you £8,000. Like, I've done this ages ago. I used to do acting, and some courses I did were astronomical, and like it was all just a smoke and mirrors. So anyway, I just want that's a slight tangent, but I just was like, I want people I just want people to feel like just like equipped with a bit of basic knowledge on that. But I wanted to ask, how did you get into yoga? Where did it sort of start for you?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I was always moving. My mom said I danced myself out of the womb, literally, and dance was my main form of movement.
Younger.
Oh, everything. I started with ballet, and I used to love like jazz and modern and lots of different stuff. I was never really cool enough for hip hop and kind of more of the street dancing. I think when you've been kind of classically trained, it's ingrained in your body to move a certain way. And
yeah,
whenever I was asked to be free flowing, I found it really difficult.
You're just like, oh my God, it's like doing stand up or something. You're just like, bah! I can't do that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually studied chemistry and maths in university, so very different to what I'm doing
now.
I
love that.
Yeah, but science, and still, even in all my teachings now, I really blend the science and the spirituality, because for me, when they overlap, the gold is really. That's not to say I don't focus on the bit science hasn't proven yet, or probably will never prove, because yeah, well, that's another, it's another tangent. But after I finished my degree, I was like, oh, I really don't think I want to work in this area. And so I decided to study dance for a year. So I did a diploma in dance. And in that class every Monday morning, in that course, I should say, every Monday morning, we had a yoga class. And it was mainly for flexibility, mobility, strength, coordination. But I was really fortunate. There was another person on that course whose mother is a pretty well-known yoga teacher in Cork, where I'm from in Ireland. And her mom has been teaching yoga for 30 years. So she grew up with yoga in the household. And so during the class, she would kind of lean over to me and kind of whisper, you know, this posture is great for chocolate cravings because it really stimulates your pancreas, you know, which releases serotonin, which, you know, helps
What?
give you that
Oh
boost.
my
And, you know,
gosh.
she was just telling me all these like things. And then equally, she might say, you know, this posture stimulates your crown chakra, which is an energetic center that connects you to the divine, whether you believe that's God or the sun or the energy around us, you know, deeply spiritual stuff as well. And my science mind and my kind of spiritual soul was just being lit up throughout the whole
Oh my
practice.
gosh.
And looking back now, that class actually wasn't that spiritual, or, you know, it was very much tailored to make us better dancers. But to me, that's the beauty of yoga, is that even if it's not being taught from a deeply spiritual, or I'm going to use the word authentic, but what I mean is kind of from the source. So even if the class is being taught in quite a Western way, with diluting down a lot of the messages, it still has an amazing effect. And people, I'm sure, who are listening, who've maybe done a yoga class, will attest to that. And so I just kind of became fascinated by it, to be honest. And I always thought I wanted to teach. I always it was interested in teaching. I love teaching. And, you know, throughout my childhood, people would often say, oh, I didn't really understand that before, but since you've explained it, I kind of get it now. You know, I'd have lots of little compliments like that. And it was never that I was trying to be a good teacher. It was like, oh, this is kind of innate. And there's a concept in yoga called Dharma, and there's a similar concept in lots of other philosophies. And in Dharma, in yoga, I should say, Dharma means your path, or your way. And it's that the belief is that you were put on this earth in this body at this time with a purpose. And that purpose doesn't have to be you are going to be a podcast host or you are going to be a yoga teacher, but the Dharma might be that you are to teach or you are to serve or to help. It can be quite broad, and you can figure your way into that purpose through a lot of different roles. It doesn't always have to be your profession either. You know, your Dharma could be to teach, and you might be that you teach your children love and compassion and a beautiful way of living. You know, it doesn't have to be
Absolutely.
your work. So I feel like I was definitely kind of really finding my Dharma at this point, and still am. And so I thought, oh, maybe I'll teach chemistry and maths, because I don't really want to work in pharmaceuticals, or which is kind of the area usually when you study chemistry you go into. And then through various different events during that year, when I was studying the dance course, my mom actually passed away from cancer. So it was a
Oh my
really
God.
difficult time.
So
And looking back now, yeah, I was quite numb at the time. I was only 23. And my brother was only 15, my sister was 25 or nearly 25. And so we were kind of left, you know, with a house and a teenager. And there was a lot going on. And
wow.
so I ended up just taking a job in pharmaceuticals because I needed money and I needed a job. I needed to be able to like help support my family. Which was one of the best things that ever happened, in a sense that you know, I had a few years of stability and structure, and you know, I suppose, time to process and heal. And in a way, if you want to kind of flip it, obviously it was a really unfortunate event, but in a way, you know, seeing my mom pass away at such a young age, she was only 52, just made me and my siblings realize that every single moment is precious, and that you should absolutely do what it is you're wanting to do, and, you know, quieten down or even silence those voices in your head that say, but I can't be a yoga teacher, or I can't leave this, you know, permanent pensionable job that everyone is telling me is a really good job.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like it's a good job. It's a beautiful job for people who want to do it, but it wasn't what was setting my soul alight, you know.
Yeah.
So I made the decision. I did about 6 years there. But then I made the decision, okay, no, this is not for me. And we actually had yoga on a Tuesday and Thursday as part of kind of like the sports and social committee. And the teacher I had there was amazing. And again, doing it every week, twice a week at least, made me realize how much I love yoga and how healing it can be. And oh, I'll never forget, I met my old boss recently, and I'll never forget her calling me into the office, and she was like, you know, Jeannie, we're really happy with you here and really impressed with your work, and we want to kind of fast track you up because we see you, you know, in management. And like, that's most people's dream, you know, to get a promotion like that before it's due. And I was just sitting in the chair sweating, you know, thinking, how can I get out of this? How can I stop this happening?
Oh my God. It's like it's so interesting. You're saying, you're like listening to your body, your brain is like, this is a great idea. But your body's no.
And I met that boss recently, and she was like, I told her that story, and she said, I did think, was this really for you? You know, she was an amazing boss. Actually, I learned so much from her. Just the way she managed people, and she was amazing. But anyway, I made that decision to leave, and it was something that I just threw myself into. There was very little rational thought looking back.
Fantastic.
I signed up for this training. I remember that yoga teacher in work, when I told her I was going to become a yoga teacher, she was like, oh, what style of yoga are you learning? And I was like, just general yoga. I had no idea what style I'd signed up for.
Oh, wow. Brilliant.
Yeah, which I know was very contrary to my advice that I just gave earlier.
No, I think that's really helpful because you're saying, look at where you are now, but where you started, you were just like, oh, just a regular yoga teacher, you know?
Yeah, I had no idea about different styles or different, you know, techniques, and I just saw this training and just my heart went yes. And I've been very fortunate to have done all my training in India. Now, I'm not saying you have to go to India for your training, but it is the home of yoga, and it is the source of yoga. And there's a lot more to yoga that is just deeply ingrained in Indian life, really, that we don't get to experience in, you know, Ireland or the UK or in Europe or anywhere else. Now, I like the trainings I offer bring in a lot of that because I've experienced so many times. So that's not to say that you have to go to India, like I said, but So I did my first training in Goa, which is super sexy. It's on the beach, you know, and it's just like, you know, bikinis and, you know, warm weather and coconuts and all that kind of stuff. And it is lovely, and it's very easy for a Westerner to go to that part of India and, you know, I suppose, acclimatize to the culture and stuff there, because it's different, of course, to ours, but it's not, you know, rural India or, you know, they're used to a lot of tourists. And that was a good training, and I was really lucky it was a good training. But I was teaching full-time for about 2 years after that, and I started to realize that actually I was adapting everything I learned there and modifying everything to fit my students that were coming to my classes. That style was Ashtanga, which is a pretty physical style of yoga. It's an amazing practice. I still love it. I do it maybe 2 or 3 times a year. It's a set sequence of postures that's always the same. And that can be great for many many reasons. Yeah. But I started to realize, even just as a woman, that, you know, there's 28 days in my cycle, I feel different every day. My body needs something different every day.
Yeah.
And actually, the Ashtanga practice was developed for prepubescent Indian boys, you know, so it's very much designed for very lean and petite bodies.
Oh, wow.
And like, even at my thinnest, I'm a solid, strong, muscular human, you know.
Yeah.
So physically, even, you know, no matter what I do or how much practice I do, physically my body cannot do the majority of those postures unless I literally cut off my muscles or, you know, break my bones. And so
oh my gosh,
I started to realize, actually, that's not really for me or my students.
Yeah.
And it's also very physically focused. There's not much of the other elements of yoga, like the breath work, the mantra, the meditation, you know, the energetics. It is a bit, but it's very physically focused.
That's, I think, so that's then really after, helpful. That's so helpful to know that, because you tried it out,
yeah,
and like, yeah, it's good, but like, you like trial and error, you go and like test things out, don't you, and see what suits you.
Mm-hmm. And it's a super brilliant practice for what I call like a gateway practice. So
okay.
A practice where people maybe are quite interested in movement and they maybe just aren't quite ready for the more spiritual or energetic practice part of yoga. And so this is a really good gateway in, and they can
okay.
go from there where they want, you know, because the style I teach now, if I had done that as my first class, I'd probably be like, oh my God, she's insane, that woman. Like, I've joined a cult. What the hell is she talking about? So
an easy way. So I build the foundation.
Yeah. No, that's not to say that, you know, there's a way of teaching every style of yoga that can be easily understood and accessed for people, for sure. But that was that style. And it gave me a super brilliant foundation. And I learned a lot. I was really fortunate with that training. And then after a lot of searching, unfortunately, that teacher, who I really respected at the time, I just really got to see, I suppose, when you get to know someone a bit more. And of course, who am I to judge someone else's life? And I still don't know what's going on in their life. But I just started to notice that they seemed really unhappy. They seemed really sad and tired and almost fed up with yoga. And this is another thing that I noticed can happen. If you make yoga your career and your income,
yeah,
some people can do it really well, some people can find the balance. But I started to notice that they were really not present when they were teaching. And anytime I met them, I felt like I was the one who was teaching them, in the sense, and that's not in an egotistical way, but I was like, I feel like I want to nurture you. And, you know, for me, in the teacher-student lineage, let's say, it should be that your teacher is someone you look up to and that you can go to for advice and wisdom and learnings. My main thing was, like, life is serious sometimes. Life is heavy. I want to learn from someone who's joyous and happy and, you know, who seems like, not that they've life figured out, because no one has, but someone who, I want to learn from someone who seems to actually enjoy what they're doing,
yeah,
and has found a balance.
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah. Again, did a big, you know, Google and search and chatted to friends and colleagues and, you know, again, went totally with my gut and ended up, without me even knowing this before I signed up for the training, in Rishikesh, which is in northern India, which is the home of yoga, really.
Wow.
It's the foothills of the Himalayas, and they say it's where yoga originated. So Rishi, or Rish, is like a sage or a wise person. And they say that Rishikesh is named Rishikesh because all the sages, all the wise ones, gathered in this place. It's the foothills of the Himalayas. It's the source of the river Ganges, which is the holy river that travels through most of India. And suddenly I ended up there with a beautiful teacher who I have now realized also doesn't have it all figured out, and you know, is a human, and you know, is imperfect as well, but who I still consistently learn from, and, you know, feel seen and held by. So and I give myself permission every moment, and this is something I'd love people listening to tune into as well, is give yourself permission that even if you feel like, wow, look at this teacher, look at this person who has taught me so much, who has helped me transform my life, give yourself permission that at any moment, if that teacher is no longer serving you, you can, you know, acknowledge them, respect them, and thank them,
yep,
but move on. Because if you don't do that, we get into this guru student complex, which is just rife with abuse and, you know, abuse of power, and whether it's intended or not. And if you're not learning, you know, move on. And that's not to be mm-hmm. flippant about it either, but you should be, you know, do you know what it is? Often if the teacher themselves stops learning, they've nothing new to share with their students. And they just get stagnant and stale. And I think that goes with everything, but especially with yoga. So that's maybe another little nugget of advice for people.
Yeah, that, I think that's fantastic advice, because it's like you've learned, you've had your time with them, you've learned what you've learned, and now it's time to move on. And you're right, if you're feeling a bit like funny, but you feel like this sense of obligation, or like, well, I'm, you know, I feel like I should stay with them, or whatever your reasoning, it's, yeah, give yourself permission to go explore, go and find someone new, you know. Mm-hmm. So many, like you said, there's so many forms of yoga. You can just go and explore your area, or explore other areas. And is there, I want to ask actually, is there anyone that you look to, like when you first started out, and you were like, I love their career, or like they really inspire you in some way?
Well, I just want to finish one more thing on this,
go
actually,
for it.
Because like what you've just said there is so valid. And then on the flip side, there's a lot of people who just jump from training to training, and who kind of, you know, the way it's like that dopamine hit we get when we're on social media, you know, scroll to the next thing, swipe. Yeah. And I've seen a lot of people do that in the yoga world as well. And they end up with a lot of trainings and not much wisdom or integration.
That's a good point.
So it's a balance, like everything in life. It's that finding that balance of, I'm just going to do a load of trainings and that means I'm a really good teacher. No, it doesn't. You know, I know people who've done thousands of hours of trainings and again, have never really integrated what they've learned.
Mm.
You know, to look at the other side of that, which we were just speaking about, there is a bit of I suppose, it's kind of like, it's something that's often said in the yoga world, especially in more traditional ways of teaching in India, is like one teacher, one life, that you dedicate yourself to something and it's challenging. And even when it's hard, you stick with it and you persevere. But that's very different to actually every part of me is screaming that I'm no longer being served by this person or by this style. So it's that super nuanced, fine line between those two things. Because let's say I've left the way of teaching in Ashtanga doesn't mean I'm never going to do it again, or you know, that I discredit it. It's always finding that. But to answer your question, it's a really interesting one. No is the short answer. There was no one person, but there was definitely people in the yoga world who, anytime I was around them, I was like, oh, I feel different here, or you know, I feel like I can be myself here. There's lots of gurus, let's say, traditionally they're male, in the yoga world, and this is coming from a very traditional yoga world. For years in India, women weren't allowed to do yoga. Now, we don't know how much of this is the yogic system or, you know, the patriarchy and colonization of India. It's really interesting because, you know, India was colonized for so many years by the British, and they still have some of these things that aren't their culture that they have just so deeply ingrained into them. So it's a really tough one to understand. But more and more, like if you look at a yoga class now, it's often 90% women, if not 100% women. you know, it's changing a bit. America, I have a friend who teaches in America. She said it's kind of 30% men now, 70% women, but it's more often than not being practiced by women now because it's a beautifully accessible movement form that you can tailor to your cycle. And there's a lot of women doing amazing work in how you can preserve the yogic teachings and the authenticity of yoga while adapting it or integrating it, I should say, into a modern way of being.
Brilliant.
So like holding on to that authenticity. Now, on the flip side, there's a lot of people who are absolutely bastardizing what yoga is. Like, I don't know if you've seen goat yoga and beer yoga, and you
Oh.
know, I've seen classes like Yin and Jin, which is like yin yoga with, you know, gin afterwards. And like
Yeah.
I love my gin and tonic. I you know, really enjoy a drink, but traditionally alcohol, even caffeine isn't taken when you're practicing yoga. You know, like
Yeah, it seems a
it's a
bit
real practice.
disrespectful.
Yeah, and do you know what it is, and I understand, it's people who see these things online, or they're suddenly trying to find a way to get people into their classes, and so they come up with these kind of novel ways that will catch the headlines and, you know, get people in. And look, all power to them, they can do what they'd like. But you know, again, to come back to what I was saying at the start, if they showed yoga, they would never offer that practice. So I wouldn't say there's any one person, but there are many, many people. And you know, there's people I know who have taught maybe 20 classes in their whole lives, but they live yogically every single day. And they have probably taught more people about life and about yoga than people who are teaching 20 classes a week, you know? So it's because it's such a craft and an art form, there's such a vast variety of people doing it different ways. When I first came home from my training, I was like, this is amazing. Everyone needs to do yoga. And I was just like harping on to anyone who'd listen. You should do yoga, you should do yoga, you should do yoga. But we all know what it's like when someone tells you you have to do something instantly. You just don't want to do it. Well, that's me
You
anyway.
was it. You can't lead a horse. Oh my gosh, we've all Everyone should just take away
Yeah.
that nugget. You can't take a oh, I can't think of the saying, the horse of water. You can't
You
make
can't,
people do
you can
anything.
lead a horse to water, but you can't make a drink, isn't
That's it. That's
Whereas as soon as I just started integrating the yogic practices into my everyday, and you know, my family started to notice, oh, Jeannie's much calmer, you know, she's less reactive, she seems to be fitter and healthier, her skin is glowing, you know, she seems happier in herself, you know, they're all the things. And then people might start going, oh, maybe I'll do a bit of yoga, you know. And that's another thing I really promote on my trainings, is like you live yoga first, and from that place that you teach, you know.
That's so wonderful. You're like the example, and then everyone's like, "What is her secret sauce? I want some of that secret sauce, please." And then they'll go from there. And if how do people get in touch with you? Because I feel like loads of people are going to be like, "I need to find this lady immediately."
Well, I'm always happy to connect to people. And my, I suppose, business or my school is called Alchemy School of Yoga. And it's Alchemy School of Yoga on Instagram, on Facebook. It's alchemyschoolofyoga.ie is my website. And the reason I gave it that name is, so I'm a chemist by academic training. And the alchemists were the first chemists. They were using different elements in nature to transform impure things into pure things. So their big thing was trying to get base metals to turn into gold. And alchemy is the process of transformation. And so when I was trying to think of a name that represented what it is I do and what it is I offer, that just came to me. Well, it was a friend of mine actually who helped me come up with it as well.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and so that's what I feel I offer, and that's what I feel yoga offers, because this really isn't about me. This is about the practice of yoga. And again, if you're looking to become a teacher, you really have to strip away that ego of you know, when people come up to you at the end and be like, oh my God, I've slept the best I've ever slept in my life, or finally I feel like, you know, I can move comfortably in my body, like all of those things, it's very easy to go, oh my God, I'm an amazing teacher.
Yeah.
But actually, you can teach yoga well, but actually that's the genuine magic of yoga. And we still don't know how it works, you know, which I love actually, because
I love
anything. I've enough of the proof and the science. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the beauty of it for me, like I said earlier as well, is that even when it's not taught that well, it's still actually quite transformational. So you can only imagine what happens when it's taught well, or taught authentically or holistically, maybe is probably a better way of saying it. So yeah, that's who I am. And, you know, I offer everything. I have a podcast where people can have a listen as well if they'd like.
What's your podcast called, so people can go and get it? Oh, and I'll put it in the show notes as well.
Yeah, it's called Yoga Uncorked. So I'm from Cork, and I was sick of these podcasts that are really curated and love and light, you know, these yoga podcasts, I should say, that were super like, yeah, yoga's so amazing and da 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 da, and I drink a green smoothie every morning. And then there's other types of yoga podcasts that are very scientific based. And I just wanted a podcast where it was just two people chatting normally about yoga. Perfect. So it's myself and my co-host Kelly, and we're both from Cork, and we speak in our Cork accents, and we curse, and we're rude, and we chat about life, and half the time we're not talking about yoga at all.
That sounds fantastic.
But most of the time we are. Yeah. Yes. So the most feedback we get is that it's like sitting down with two friends over a cup of tea and chatting about life.
Good. That's what it and maybe be.
Yeah, similar to us, hopefully, chatting here. And probably the episode that people listening, if they are interested in becoming a yoga teacher, I did an episode on the education of yoga.
Oh, cool.
I think it's episode 32 ish, around that number anyway. They can have a little look for that, or even send me a message and I'll send it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of has quite a broad we cover a lot of what yoga is, because I suppose even on this, I've been chatting a lot about how to become a yoga teacher. But for anyone listening who is a yoga teacher, there's lots of trainings you can do to further your education in yoga as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's so useful, because I'm the same as you. I want it to be, you need like the middle ground, the bridge between, I don't like really floaty abstract language when it comes to like spirituality stuff. I think it can be useful, but like, I think if someone wants to, I think it's what puts people off, because they think they don't understand, that they're not good enough, or they don't understand things and other people do.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you just use kind of grounded, normal human language, more people can train and do these beautiful jobs and not be in situations they don't want to be in, or like, if they feel like I just would love it if someone was in a job they didn't like, or in this, even like a situation, and they were like, I need to have another income, or like, I've always wanted to do this, but I've never ever thought I could, or like they've been discouraged from it, or had some weird experience, just to know that like there's options and you've always got resources. So I think that episode of yours sounds absolutely perfect for that as well.
And with the like COVID has brought so many things online, most teachers now have classes online. Like, I've loads of classes online that are for free, you know, on YouTube that people can try out. And I'm sure with other people in your area as well. And then you get a sense of the teacher, you get a sense of what they're offering. And from that place, then you can kind of decide, oh, do I want to study with this person? Do I want to give up my time and my finances to learn from this person, you know? Yeah, and it's such a, you know, a lot of people come and do a training purely for their own practice and their own life.
Yeah.
And they might end up teaching one class a month or something.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be your career, it doesn't have to be your profession, because there's challenges that come with that as well. And I'm always trying to find that balance of, you know, what's important, but what is also allowing me not get burnt out, you know, still be able to give openly to people, as opposed to feeling exhausted or in lack, or it's a fine balance.
Oh my gosh, well, I feel like I've I've gone over, but I don't care. I could talk to you for hours. You was so helpful, and thank you so much for sharing all your advice and wisdom. I feel like this is really gonna help people, so thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. And if anyone is listening, and I mean this, if they've come across a training and they're feeling like, oh, maybe I'd like to do this, send it to me. Send me the link. I'll usually know within the first like 5 seconds whether that training is in alignment with that person or not. So I'm very happy to offer that service. I'd much rather you guys, you know, find a training that suits you than waste your time and money on one that really isn't for you. So I'm happy to offer that.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for saying that. That's so helpful. We'll all guide you. We'll help each other get what you need. The right
for
people.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, she was incredible. Thank you so much to Jeannie for coming on and talking to me and sharing all her wisdom and just really helpful practical tools and advice for anyone who wants to be a yoga teacher. And all the contact information for Jeannie will be in the show notes. And as she mentioned, she's got her own podcast called Yoga Uncorked podcast, which is on Spotify. So go and listen to her. And I will see you soon. Bye.